sweet tea, and creativity. Time for more Jessica Burtis questions on the Midweek Drive.
You know what they call sweet tea in the South?
What's that?
Tea.
It's fair to say that one of the best things about 2020 was the compilation of the complete notes from the universe. There, I'm holding it up to the microphone now, the complete notes from the universe, which frankly is a text that the universe has been waiting to produce in so many ways. Performing miracles isn't a matter indeed of doing the impossible. It's a matter of redefining the possible. And that's pretty much what we do on a regular basis on the Midweek Drive. But even more so when you've got the awesome inspirational guru with us back in all sorts of wonderful ways from Florida. It's Mike Dooley. How are you, Mike?
I'm happy, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a genuine delight. It's been far too long since we last connected. Of course, I think it was at the start of Lockdown 1, or Lockdown 1.0, as I think we refer to that now. We're into Lockdown 3.0, which is great. And obviously, you're thriving from that point of view. In the team as well, we've got three fabulous individuals, possibly a fourth one will be joining us. First of all, ace singer-songwriter Chloe Rose. How are you, Chloe?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you, and good to be on the show.
Absolutely, a delight as ever. And the single, of course, that was released a few days ago is still doing extremely well. Hearts on the Tracks, I believe it's called.
Yay!
Excellent. We also have from North Carolina, so closer to you, Mike, than any of the team in the UK, it's Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Hello, I'm pretty good. How is everyone doing?
Hi, Jessica.
Over. Exactly. And a gentleman who has been through his own rationale for life, the universe, and all sorts of ways. He's one of our ace film critics. And indeed, I actually insisted he actually sign up to the Universe Today Notes from the Universe. It's the awesome Robin Pierce. How are you, Robin?
Hello there. It's a pleasure to meet you, Mike. They normally have me on after you've been. So, you know, the interesting guy's been, and then I'm left to mop up.
Oh, the best for last, okay? You're very modest.
No.
Well, Robin, let's start off with yourself before we come to Jessica and Chloe, because I think, Robin, would you like to just share with Mike your own particular path through the universe and also how you found his daily notes?
Absolutely. It was in the early days of my doing the Midweek Drive, and Alex thought it'd be a good idea for me to come on just after you and do like a review of the show, knowing what I'd just been through, i.e. I had just suffered a major heart attack. While I was in hospital, I then contracted an infection in my heart and I slipped away three times during the night.
Oh my God.
So I kind of came back, you know, on the radio, wondering, you know, what is this? What's going on? You know, why do I get to come back and some people don't? And what is my, you know, do I have something that I've got to do now? I mean, am I, you know, spared for a mission? And, you know, in the middle of this, I guess what you can call existential angst, you were kind of an inspirational beacon, if I may say, without sounding, you know, too flowery about it. And I found a lot of truth in what you said, and you really were a big help in helping me find a way to kind of, you know, carry on and seeing it not as, oh my God, I died, you know, but more like not in a religious way, but wow, I've been given a second chance. I've been reborn, you know?
Wow, that's very heavy, Robin, and well done. You've come through it well.
It's heavier than we normally do on this show, I'll tell you.
Fantastic. Well, I'm inspired by your comeback and your attitude. Awesome.
Well, I thought I'd bowl it into to you, Mike, because obviously we've talked around various things in the past, etc. I mean, Robin, do you still actually find those daily notes quite effective? Because I mean, I must admit, I think they're pretty
yes,
damn good.
Sometimes, you know, I mean, not every day is a great day, is it? Only yesterday, I actually lost a very close friend of 24 years to COVID-19. He passed away on a respirator, and of course, the old questions come back, like, how did I come back and he doesn't? And I always find something of value, of immense personal value in what you say. It's I don't want to sound like these people who read horoscopes and try and find some truth in what they read in the daily newspaper or Cosmopolitan magazine, but very often it seems that what you're writing is directed this way. And I know it applies. We all five of us could read something exactly the same and read something different into it. But what you write seems to be so open, it seems narrowly personal to each and every person that they read. That's my finding of it anyway. And this lot will tell you, I am brutally honest about everything.
Well, then that's a high compliment. I'm really thrilled to get this feedback, Robin. And I think it's as simple as we are all, without sounding too flowery myself, brothers and sisters on an adventure from on high with so much in common that when one starts articulating truth, and any and many do, we do find a resonance and perhaps a touchstone to where we are in our own lives. I mean, we're all on the adventure. We're all in love, loved, looking for purpose, trying to find happiness. We're in the same game. And so my messages from the universe and all that I teach usually have this common chord based on a few simple truths. And I do believe there are some things that are immovable, pillars of reality. You know, we're all in this together. We're all of one. There's only God, only love, whatever you want to call it, some divine power that we are part of, not separate from. And when you start seeing this and realizing that this is an eternal, you know, march, celebration, dance in the palm of God's hand, suddenly there is hope and there is meaning and there's order and purpose. And if we don't put our finger on that order and purpose, at least we can sense that it is there. So it's our commonality, our brotherhood, sisterhood.
Yep.
I just thought, as you're speaking, I thought I'd do a random turn to actually page 392 in terms of Notice to the Universe with the line, everything matters. It's not so much about having faith in yourself. Way too hard. Besides, you can wrestle that crocodile after you move mountains. For now, just have faith in me, in the magic and in the unseen, and it shall be done. Tally-ho, the universe. Chloe, we've talked at length back in the day where we weren't socially distanced, of course, and we were connecting in all sorts of ways. What are your thoughts and your take on the kind of way that Mike channels very much the sort of the notion of this and produces some outstanding work with obviously the universe today and motivators and so on? Over to you, Chloe.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. And honestly, what you're doing, Mike, as well, and it's giving everybody that inspiration to keep going, to keep motivated. And it just intrigues me so much. And I definitely agree with you. I do feel that we are all connected and we're all interlinked in some way. And I feel like there's a purpose for everything. And if you keep positive, you'll manifest something positive as well. And yeah, just have faith, having faith in the universe, it's going to bring good things. If you're always thinking, oh, something's not going to happen, more than likely you're going to force it to move that way. But if you keep positive, just keep going, it'll be all good. So honestly, I'm so intrigued to hear more about this, Mike. So, so much intrigued. I love stuff like this.
Well,
in my element.
Thank you, Chloe. And I think the reason it comes together is beyond that there are these few immovable truths, but one of those truths that rings of what you're speaking of right now, and it's certainly not me, you know, this is, you know, maybe what I channeled, I didn't set this game in order, but being of the divine, by the divine, for the divine, and I don't mean that in any religious way, I'm not a religious character, I got rid of that stuff a long time ago in my life, but I'm spiritual, and I don't think that they need one another. They usually don't go well together, spirituality and religion. But with a spiritual lens, we come to find, and it's, the evidence is everywhere when we at least hear it once, that we are so much more inclined to succeed than fail, to be happy than sad, to be healthy than sick, by 10,000 times. And my main teaching is that our thoughts become things, the things and events of our lives. We can change the direction of our lives on a dime, as we say here in the US, meaning very quickly, by changing what's going on here. And it's easier than we think. And too often, though, people were like, oh, my God, I mean, I have to rely on this. You know, I'm filled with fear. I'm negative. I can't do it. But what we don't realize, given the inclination to thrive, that it's easier to succeed than not, it's as if our positive thoughts are 10,000 times more powerful than our negative thoughts. So the people who worry that they worry, I'm like, don't go there. It's okay. Even if you worry, so long as you have a little bit of positivity, even if that positivity is polluted with some negativity, that you had some positivity, that perhaps you showed up anyway, all of a sudden, it's as if you're pushed on to greatness. And all of our lives are a testament to this. You know, people tend to think if they're optimistic, they have a 50-50 shot at what? Survival, I don't know. But looking at the evidence, we've all crushed it. You know, we're thriving here, even in our ignorance. And when you realize that, you stop worrying that you worry. You may still worry, but it's not a big deal. And you move forward. You have optimism. This is what we all have in common. It explains all the stunning overachievers, success track records since the beginning of time. And I think it's why the notes from the universe resonate with, you know, now upwards of 1 million people every day get those emails because I'm not my truths, something I witnessed. We're all here for great things.
Jessica, let's turn to your good self in North Carolina. And I think in terms of the actual sort of positivity and the working out that, you know, we follow through. Prayer, I think, works wonders to actually go through a whole range of things. What questions have you got for Mike?
I'm curious, have you always had this mindset, or is it kind of one you developed over time through seeing things, through experiencing it?
I think I was always filled with questions, and I was raised a Catholic, and I went to Sunday school and CDD and CCD and confirmation. But, you know, I had a lot of questions for the priests and the nuns, and, you know, the kind of questions that we all have. Like, you know, why would God throw somebody in hell forever if they were mistreated and didn't know any better, you know? And because I kept asking those questions and they didn't have answers, parents didn't have answers, I started thinking about them, which we're not encouraged to do usually. You know, it's like read more books. You know, you can't know it if you don't get taught it. But I kept going within, and, you know, literally law of attraction, you bring about what you think about. And this is true, Jessica, of answers as much as best friends, money, career, clarity. And I started attracting answers that were evidenced by everyone's life. And then I started attracting books as well. There's a very few that I post at my website, like 15, that have really helped confirm my own inner suspicions. But mostly it came within. Everybody has this inside of them. We're of God. We are the answer, but we just haven't been trained that way. And then you start living it. This is what always excited me. I never thought I'd be a teacher of this stuff. I just wanted to be in love, get rich, travel the world. And it's like, that's the least any one of us can have. I did it all, and times 1,000. And then it's like, you know, not that all of my desires are filled. We all have a divine sense of incompletion that keeps us going forevermore to grow and become greater. But you get to a point where it's like, you know, the thing I would most like these days is to see more people live in the joy that I have found for myself. And the answers are within. Half the stuff, if not 90% of the stuff I've just shared to all of you listening right now on the panel as well, it resonates, doesn't it? It's the truth. We know the truth when we hear it. We get lit up by it. And we just need to learn to trust ourselves and to trust that, yeah, it is that good. We are that loved. We've never been judged. We're pushed on to greatness every day.
Robin, back to your good self. I mean, again, as our resident cynic and curmudgeonly soul, does that work you through?
Well, I'm just trying to process something that Mike just said, which I absolutely love, and I can absolutely vouch for, and it is that it is easier to succeed than it is not to succeed. But somehow we are all programmed to expect failure. Now, I believe that, yeah, I'm a father of two. I believe that kids are inherently born positive and optimistic. And somehow, somewhere, the pessimism and the negativity gets programmed into them, usually by lazy parenting or lazy teaching. Their optimism isn't fed. It isn't nurtured. What would you say to that?
Oh, Chloe spot and Jessica on. Are both nodding. We live in really primitive times. Sorry, Alex. I thought that was for me. We live in really primitive times, spiritually speaking. We are caveman, cavewoman, all of us. We hardly ever rely on our inner senses, although they are the most powerful ones, including being led by our heart. Instead, we eat of the forbidden fruit, which was a metaphor for believing that the illusions, in this case, the apple, are more real than that which gave them rise, our focus. We are streaming manifestors. It's all our creation. This is God working through us. God is infinitely more than us, but we are pure God. And so we've agreed to the parameters of time, space, and matter to kind of have these amazing adventures of have and have not, here, there, now, later, you know, the illusions of time and space, because it's all happening in the heart of God, because we're safe, because we are eternal. This is, you know, even scientists will tell you that there's nothing solid. If you get close enough, magnified enough, you go right through it. And Einstein and others said, you know, true science is an attempt to understand the mind of God. We are God's thoughts become things, and now our thoughts become things in this just grand, amazing odyssey without end. But you and I, those listening, are very early in the arc of our spiritual conscious evolution, which comes with a lot of benefits. It's not all bad. I mean, there's still love everywhere, infinite possibilities everywhere. And so, given the dark ages we still live in, making possible for subsequent lighter ages, we tend to think life is hard, people are mean, God is angry. You know, a lot of base assumptions have been made in spite of the evidence to the contrary. But again, it's okay. It's all beautiful. We're powerful. We're all going to get there. It's just one big collective, beautiful, juicy dream.
Yeah, it seems that we are pre-programmed to expect failure and blame it on somebody else because, you know, failure is never our fault. So, you know, I've always been more of a, you know, not what if it all goes horribly wrong. We'll deal with that if it happens. What if it goes right? And this seems to be the message that you are affirming in our email boxes several times a week.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. That's exactly where we are.
Jessica, thoughts from yourself?
I love what you both were saying about how children kind of have this natural innocence and optimism towards the world. It reminded me of in Star Wars, the planet of Naboo, they elect leaders who are children because they say that they have a natural innocence that makes them have a very good inclination to be excellent leaders, and that we should listen to children a bit more because they can kind of understand things better than we can after being inundated with all this negativity.
The best teachers ever.
And it's probably a fair point to actually say, Mike, that as Jessica just said, they're quoting from a text that actually we're getting all these messages all the time. And sometimes we filter them through and we don't acknowledge them. And I'm not saying that we should actually convert from Catholicism to Jedi, because that would be crazy. Or maybe it wouldn't. But in terms of the actual overall sort of system, I think it's important to again, be open to listening to the way that things actually sort of give us signposts, perhaps?
For me, I have a little litmus test for truth. If a new idea either speaks of life's beauty or speaks of our power and leaves no one out under any circumstances, it's probably truth. But, you know, I tell everybody in my audiences and in my books, if anything I say doesn't resonate with you, if it seems wrong, just reject it. But ask yourself, what is the truth? Because we have that within us. And while we can't unravel every mystery in the cosmos, we can unravel the mystery of our own happiness. And like Robin said, you know, we're getting better. We know people are accepting responsibility for their own happiness, but they haven't started accepting responsibility for their own unhappiness. That's a totally different thing. That's somebody else's fault. But we're getting there. We're getting there.
Chloe, does this echo your kind of experiences as a songwriter and obviously in your pathway as a teacher as well now? What messages or questions have you got?
It really does. I think it's, honestly, this whole subject just intrigues me so much. But as we were talking about with children and young children as well, I just think there's so much, you know, that so open to the world and yeah, I don't really know what happens, but I do feel it hits a point where they sort of get, I don't know. I think they're just more aware. They've got a higher awareness of what's happened, and then that kind of closes. I don't know. I mean, I'm intrigued, Mike. What do you think on this? And like, when did you start to be spiritually? You know, have you ever been spiritually like, what's the word? Spiritually awakening. Have you had a spiritual awakening like a long time ago? What happened? I just want to know.
Well, I think we all have the ability to wake up. Children are awake. And as Alex and Robin were saying, you know, too often the parents that they look up to, the guardians that they have, you know, tell them to get practical, get real. And they have a broken heart or something doesn't work out and they get closed off. But still, even then, we all have that ability to ask big questions. We ought to be encouraging everyone to wonder about the nature of reality because it's a pathway to truth, and truth empowers and emboldens and reveals that this is a universe of love. And for me, I would say it was very incremental. By the time I was a teenager, I was dabbling with hypnosis and UFOs and things on the fringe that kind of veered towards wondering bigger questions about why are we here? And in my early 20s at university, you know, I was on the verge of becoming very religious because I wanted answers. I was on the verge of dropping out of society. I was like, I mean, really, this is getting overwhelming. I got to figure it out. And my mom started sending me these books that were channeled by a being. And I was like, Mom, you need some help. But she said, forget where it came from. Just read what the Seth material dictated by Jane Roberts. Jane Roberts' books would be How to Find Seth. Just read what Seth has to say. And there was no agenda. I did what she said. There was no agenda from Seth. It was all about the beauty, the love, our power. It was just like, wow. And then it's like, these are the answers I was sussing out myself. And it means I can go live an amazing life. And I have. It's been incredible. Still is.
And indeed, one of the earliest texts by Michael Dooley, not so much Mike Dooley, but Mike Dooley, is, of course, Lost. Nothing to do with the J.J. Abrams series of the same name. But I think this is a classic, very potent, very small, but very important text, Mike. I mean, it addresses all sorts of things in terms of, obviously, tracing in material existence, the whole notion of time. Which again sort of echoes with this notion that we talk quite freely about time and space and what are we and who are we and so on. And maybe I'd say historically, great teachers have actually had this. It's just somehow it's become confused and obfuscated, a bit like social media across the centuries.
Yeah, social media in the United States the last 4 years. Yeah, there's a lot of fear and ignorance, and they don't like these kind of ideas. They feel threatened by these ideas. They like They like it the way things used to be. Let's be great again. And it's mostly, I think, the last vestiges of an old guard that's giving way to a kinder, gentler, more enlightened crowd. You know, the tide that's rising right now, facilitated, believe it or not, by COVID and other things causing us all to be more introspective, is irreversible. We're moving more into truth. We're moving away from these props that held us back in fear. And I think within a couple of years, certainly a couple of decades, we are going to start seeing heaven on earth. And that may sound bodacious, and I certainly don't mean a religious heaven on earth, but just a place where there's respect and inclusivity and a finer regard and greater appreciation for the magnificence that we get to live in every single day on planet Earth.
The Shangri-La syndrome, as we've talked about on other previous shows as well. Jessica, would you like to give me a number between 1 and 400, please? We'll do a random selector choice here.
Oh, okay. 202.
202. Okay, we're going to turn to page 202. And just as I say, as we begin to close out this particular thing, we'll find out what message is actually put on 202. And 202 actually comes up with this little number. You could call me your friend, but that's not quite enough. You could call me your guide, but there's more to it than that. You could call me your conspirator, your helper, or your agent, your coach, counselor, or confidant, your mother, father, or child. You could call me the sun, the moon, and the stars, the wind, the sky, and the rain, the past, the present, and the future. But really, what I'm getting at, the purpose behind all these notes, and perhaps what I'd most like to hear one day, is you calling me yourself. I just thought,
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Mic drop.
Good
you
one.
Everything. You are you and you are everything. Yeah.
I love Robin, that. Any other questions you'd like to put to Mike at present?
Well, actually, my line of questioning was going to be pretty much like what Mike has just addressed, that as we are still in a COVID pandemic worldwide, and as we have suffered worldwide 4 years of a repressive empire building fiend over there in the USA, how
I don't know
this
who you could be referring to
impacted
there, Robin. Goodness me.
I don't want to assume.
She was over here for part of the time.
How has this impacted, if at all, on the messages that you send, and you know, any questions that you might be asked by anybody who's seeking your help?
Oh,
are people more pessimistic now, or are they getting cautiously optimistic?
I would say it's almost neutral. It certainly has not affected my messages in writing, although I do field the question, Robin, quite a bit, like, you know, is this a punishment? What's going on? How do I cope with this? And in a soundbite, the answer is this COVID, this lockdown, the flaring of diverse political opinions, this is actually all part of a healing where things are coming to the surface that should have been dealt with long ago, but they weren't. My wife's Mexican, and many of my friends obviously now are Mexican, and one of whom went to high school, grew up mostly in the United States, went to college in the United States, and never felt any discrimination, a young man, and always felt like he was, you know, kind of a naturalized American, who now, by the way, lives back in Mexico and has done so for 5 years. But with the divisive nature that has bubbled over the top, he is dumbfounded to see his friends from high school and college posting on Facebook their true feelings about immigration and build the wall and go back to where you came from. This was there all along, but they played over like they were one and the same. So, point being, this is a healing that looks horrible and it looks like, wow, things are worse now than they've ever been. No, it's just all come to the surface to make way for better, more cohesive society. It's been prophesized for millennia, from Nostradamus to the Mayan calendar, that there would be not the end of times, but the beginning of times. And they pretty much nailed it, you know, the year 2000, 2012. This is the beginning of the best of times on planet Earth.
Isn't it interesting that there's an old Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times. And these are interesting times.
Perhaps it's a blessing, Robin. It's not a curse, it's a blessing. Yeah. Much like Mike's regular free spiritual tune-ups, which of course emerged, and these can be accessed, Mike, of course, via Facebook, I believe, and Instagram, at 9:15 a.m. each morning Eastern time. I managed to sort of watch one or two of them. They're pretty impressive, though. You're pretty much on good form, though. I mean, I sort of silently sort of just accessed them. I thought, these are darn good things. Just expand a little bit more on the free spiritual tune-ups.
Yeah. Oh, not. I started doing that back in March, April, when I was suddenly working at home and the whole world was like, wow, this is really shocking. And there was a lot of reaching out for clarity, truth, comfort. And so ever since then, 5 days a week, take the weekends off, I answer people's questions every day on a Facebook Live. It's usually done within 5 or 10 minutes. I simultaneously broadcast on Instagram. So that's New York City time at my Mike Dooley author Facebook page or my Instagram page. You can find it if you Google it. My website's tut.com. And it's free. It's fun. I cover everything from God to manifesting to aliens and Bigfoots.
Well, so we haven't really got time to actually go into the two sort of key things. I mean, one of which was actually something which I think the lockdown, from my own point of view, certainly convinced me of even more so. And that's the Guardian Angel route. And of course, your work with Lorna Byrne and the elements related to that. And also, of course, the notions of Frank, the personification of an extraterrestrial source. But that's perhaps for another time, which I think is another whole area that Chloe will doubtless get very excited about and probably write songs about as well, which is great.
Yes.
Good enough for David Bowie. It's good enough for Chloe Rose. That's what I'd say. Jessica, last two questions for Mike, please. Over to you.
Mike, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer link with us today?
It was the best ever. Thank you all so much.
Fantastic. And will you be joining us again?
The sooner the better. Thanks again.
Fantastic stuff. Mike Dooley, we salute you. Chloe Rose, Jessica Burtis, Robin Pierce, thank you. Keep on keeping on. And I think we need to wrap up, Mike, with that classic line, thoughts become things, so...
choose the good ones.
So, television, it hasn't expired. It hasn't reached its expiration date. We're more of a screen-based culture than ever. And it would seem that if we're looking towards things like the Midweek Cuckoos, a new sci-fi prison break drama, intergalactic and so on, all sorts of things could be actually happening with respect to this. Who better than to actually talk us through some of the things to look forward to as we continue our journey through Lockdown 3 than television presenter and film critic extraordinaire, and indeed television critic, as well as singer-songwriter, of course, the wonderful Jamie East. How are you, Jamie?
How are you doing? Singer-songwriter. No one's called me that for a long time, but thank you very much. My favourite person right now.
Thank you, Jamie. It's always important for us to do our research. And talk us through this sort of system, because obviously in times of crisis of the 20th century, we go to the cinema. That's not going to happen now. But in terms of obviously our home-based system, the television would seem to have actually just become even more important to us for our entertainment.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like you say, you're quite right. You know, a lot of people are missing cinemas, and, you know, but technology's moved on so much. You know, we've got Ultra HD, we've got, you know, a lot of people are lucky enough to have decent sized tellies or decent sized sound systems that go with it. You know, a little bit of surround sound isn't beyond the reach of many of us now. So it's all about, that boils down to, in a pandemic, what can we actually get our hands on? What can we access? And cinema's a good example, actually, of an industry that seemingly should have been brought to its knees by the pandemic. And in some ways, a lot of blockbusters have now been delayed time and time again. Bond's been delayed about 3 or 4 times now. But in others, it's you know, people have found opportunity in that. You know, there have been huge Hollywood blockbusters put on Sky, for example. Like, I think The Invisible Man was one of the early ones from Lockdown One. There's been Trolls World Tour. We've just seen Wonder Woman 84 arrive, almost immediately upon its cinematic release. And on top of that, it's all about investment into cinema and accepting that actually people are quite happy to watch a blockbuster at home. They don't want to sometimes travel 10 miles to an industrial estate and spend £9 on a bag of popcorn. And Sky are one, certainly the leaders of investing in that content. They've doubled down in 2021 on the amount of original content that's coming to our screens. You know, it's 50% up on last year. There's 120 odd original pieces of television coming from Sky this year, which includes, 30 films. And when we're talking films, we're not talking kind of, made for telly films. We're talking, proper Hollywood blockbusters. There's an adaptation of Matt Haig's novel, A Boy Called Christmas. That's coming out, funnily enough, around about Christmas time this year. We've got Save the Cinema with Samantha Morton and Harry Potter's Tom Felton, which is being shot right now. The investment is all there, and it's also understanding people's behaviors and people's appetites, and Sky are best place to do that. They've known for years how much we enjoy binge watching a box set. I'm sure I'd be horrified if I saw the data on my viewing habits, the amount of time that I've sat down and thought I was just watching, a 45 minute episode of something, and then 4.5 hours later I can't get up off the sofa would terrify me. But there's so much more to come. And so whether it's movies or box sets or dramas or comedies, we're not going anywhere. It's all still coming, and the pandemic hasn't slowed it down one little bit.
One of the elements that comes across from what you've been saying there, Jamie, and I commend your enthusiasm, is the vast range of things that are actually there. But of course, as the Buddhists might say, where there is choice, there is misery. How do we actually make that selection between actually saying, I can't stand any more episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks? I know it's not on Sky, but it's another platform, etc. Or they basically want to lock into something. Because the days where we used to obviously purchase TV listing guides, for instance, that's not going to happen now.
No, and I think actually the way that people find programs is really interesting. A lot of money gets spent on marketing in terms of billboards and all the rest of it. Whereas actually, when we're talking about quality drama or films or even documentaries, the vast majority of my new shows get told to me by people that I respect or our peers. Radio is a great example of that. Hearing someone enthuse about a program is worth far more than seeing an advert, I personally think, anyway. So, and you're right, though, the discovery is sometimes completely overwhelming, especially when there are so many different platforms. I'm here to talk about Sky, but as you know, Sky, if you've got a Sky Q box, you can get Netflix, Disney and Amazon Prime on there anyway. It's all integrated into the system, so we're all kind of one big happy family, I guess. But in terms of recommendations, there's the EPG is really good, the electronic programming guide's really good, but all the trailers are there as well. If you're stuck for ideas, you can just click the side of your Sky remote and say Sky Unmissable, and it'll present a load of stuff to you as well. And I find that actually AI is getting quite good as well, whether it's on Netflix or whether it's on Sky Q. If you've watched something, if you're into Succession, the kind of computer's really good at actually suggesting different things that might seem a bit left of field, but actually really settle in well.
Indeed so. And we look ahead to some of the upcoming highlights. I mean, obviously from the movie world, HBO Max have already said, thanks to Warner Brothers or vice versa, or maybe to their chagrin, that the biggies like The Matrix and Dune and other sort of aspects will be released simultaneously. Yeah. There are lots of questions with respect to that. But we also look ahead, obviously, you mentioned Disney Plus, which you can get on the Sky channels. Presumably the series relating to The Winter Soldier and Loki, they're going to sort of get an input as well. But as you said, word of mouth presumably is also a really good way of getting some of the more quirky approaches together. I mean, I'm interested as well in terms of the Bruno versus Tyson that's being featured as far as documentaries are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the trailer for that for the first time last night, and it just looks absolutely incredible. I think, you know, people of a certain age in the UK, that for me was, God, I can't, aside from the 86 World Cup, that was one of the biggest kind of sporting events that I can remember growing up. The build-up was like something we'd never seen it before. And obviously this was at a time before pay-per-view TV, you know, was even thought of. So, you know, we couldn't even watch it in the UK, if I remember rightly. It wasn't shown anywhere. You had to listen to it on the radio at something like 2 or 3 in the morning. So it was in Vegas, if I recall. And then wait for the news the following morning. So we all heard the results, but didn't even see any footage of it. We saw photographs of it on the news. That's how crazy those times were. So watching the trailer for this documentary, it really was spine tingling, because I think Frank Bruno's kind of handed over his own personal home movies that he recorded during the build-up and during training. There's some really kind of quite gut-wrenching scenes of him saying goodbye to his kids before he goes out to fight him. You know, it looks, and then at the end, I mean, talk about a cliffhanger. At the end, you just, when you think the trailer's over, you see a present day Bruno driving up to Mike Tyson's front door and knocking on it. I mean, that's worth the admission fee alone, surely.
Absolutely, in a socially distanced way, obviously.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to? I mean, you've obviously whetted our appetite with a number of things there, Jamie. I mean, as we look to sort of mark the TV calendar and so on through 2021, is there anything that particularly stands out for your good self?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Midwich Cuckoos earlier on, which is made by David Farr, who did the Night Manager for us. And but he's adapted John Wyndham's, it's like a spooky kind of sci-fi novel. I'm really keen on that. There's something called Intergalactic, which looks fantastic. It kind of has a slight kind of Avengers / Battlestar Galactica kind of feel. So if you're into your dystopian sci-fis, then this is the one for you. It's about a jailbreak that takes place in space. Aside from that, there's Steve Backshaw. You know, who doesn't love a bit of Steve Backshaw? He's done a great documentary called Shark. Funnily enough, it's about sharks, which just looks absolutely stunning. So, I mean, there's tons and tons. I mean, personally, all of this is, you know, will keep me going all throughout the year as I cling on to the hope that we will see Succession Season 3 pretty soon.
You see, personally, I like to see, in the same way as you're excited about the Tyson Bruno piece, I'd like to see a behind the scenes on the Beekeepers, but that's a different line.
Mate, you would not want to watch that.
No. I don't know. I can see there could be a market there. Meanwhile, where would you point people in terms of finding out more details about things they can watch, upcoming treats, etc., Jamie?
It's dead easy. You can just click the button on the side of your Sky Q remote and say Sky Unmissable, or just head to just Google Now TV or search for, or go to sky.com. It's all there.
Jamie, it's been a delight sharing some thoughts with your good self. I'll throw in 2 final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I have. It's been reasonably interesting. Thank you very much.
That's okay. So can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not too distant future? Will you come back?
Absolutely.
Jamie East, presenter, television and film critic extraordinaire, and indeed singer-songwriter. Take care. Keep on keeping on.
Thanks, mate.
Well, National Walk Your Dog Month. Who would have thought it, eh? But you may have just taken a receipt of a fine canine friend, etc. And we're delighted now to spend a few moments actually just addressing some of the key issues that come across with that from the co-founder of Vet on the Net. It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's the amazing Dr. Natalie Walters. How are you, Natalie?
Very well, thank you very much. How are you, Alex?
Yeah, all good. We've also got on the call the fabulous Rebecca Bond, an undergraduate at the University of Lincoln. Rebecca, do you have a canine friend?
I do, yes. His name's Alfie. He's a Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
Well, there you are, Natalie. This could almost be written for Alfie, the Staffordshire Bull Terrier. Because, I mean, I've got to admit, I wasn't aware that this was National Walk Your Dog a Month. Presumably it's a year as well, but talk us through why we've actually got this to celebrate, and also perhaps some of the things which people aren't aware of when they're walking their dogs.
So, yeah, I think National Walk Your Dog Month, I was surprised, I have to say, this is the first year I've actually heard of it, and I think we're making a much bigger thing of it. And I don't know whether that's partly because so many people do have new pets. I think, if anything, they've probably chosen a poor month. And the reason for that is, who is bothered as much in January as we might be in a lovely April month? But you're right, it's important to exercise our dogs every single day. So even when it's January and it's wet and rainy and cold, we need to get out there with them. So one of the really important things to look at is if you are out and about walking, you can feel it under your own feet. You find that grit, that salty, sandy grit. When you pop back for a walk after, give those feet a rinse. Nice lukewarm water to keep our dog's feet nice and clean and clear of that grit and sand, because it can be really uncomfortable for them.
That certainly, Natalie, was one of the key things I was quite surprised by. Rebecca, does Alfie get a nice warm paw wash after you've taken him out around the streets of Norwich?
I can't say he did until I found out about it. I think that's one of the things that we have to take the responsibility for as dog owners. You do need to research into the weather changes, the season changes. And I think that's why it's really important, Natalie, that you're coming on to talk about it. Because even as a dog owner myself, I wasn't aware of it. So from now on, he will be.
Yeah, he'll be like, oh, this is quite nice.
Yeah, he will. Do you know what? He will love it, actually. He does like water. He loves swimming as well. So
yeah, Rebecca, any other questions you want to put in the particular to Natalie at this stage? I mean, I'm thinking about how dogs react to other dogs is always a classic from my time as a dog walker.
Yeah, so my dog is very friendly with other dogs. He seems to, you know, say a quick hello and that's it. He moves on with his day. How would you say to pet owners, dog owners especially, if your dog isn't too happy being around other dogs, in the company of other dogs, how would you say they go about this? Is there something you change about that, or do you accept that that's how your dog is? What advice would you give to owners?
I think that's a really great question. And I think if you have got a dog who is worried about other dogs being around, I think it's really important to, one, keep them safe while we do something about it. So keeping them on lead. And if you are worried that they offer a potential bite risk, then popping a muzzle on them so that you know that your dog can't get itself in any trouble while we do the training. Also, while you put something in place, you want to avoid actually having that conflict issue. So rather than saying, my dog's worried about dogs, I'm going to introduce it to 50 dogs in the next 5 minutes. For a dog who's worried, that might go, well, this is a terrible idea because now you're even worse. So I would say keep yourself safe, but then seek professional help. So you can look at veterinary behaviourists are a really great place to start. We're really lucky. So if you are worried about doing it in the pandemic and actually coming into contact with people, we have a vet who's also got a master's in behaviour on the team. So if you do want some support, Vet on the Net can help you with our behaviourist. And she can give you some top tips and things to work on. It's not going to be an overnight fix. So if you do have a dog who's worried about other dogs, don't expect in the next 5 minutes of training going, oh, well, look, everything's solved. It's going to be a persistent training regime that you'll go down. So it does take lots of dedication, but you can make things much better and therefore much more enjoyable for you and your dog on a walk.
I was particularly intrigued, Natalie, by the fact that looking into to Vet on the Net, it's almost a service that we didn't realise we needed. I mean, we have our regular veterinary correspondents. We have a recent graduate of the Royal Agricultural College. The Veterinary College. It's a Royal something. Royal Veterinary College.
Yeah, the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons.
Thank you. Precisely. Exactly. Zoe Jameson, who's regularly with us, although she specialises in horses. Share with us a little bit about Vet on the Net, because I mean, as a creation, it just looks as though it's ideal for people to actually get in touch with somebody pretty much 24/7.
And you've hit the nail on the head as why we wanted to create it. And we don't want to be instead of your physical registered veterinary surgeon. So we still want you to have that great relationship with them. But the sorts of cases I think it's amazing for is 8 o'clock on a Monday night, you've just put your children to bed, the puppy does something weird, and you're thinking, I've now got to decide, do I rush my pup down to an emergency vet and wake the children and the stress that goes along with that and the cost and everything? Or is there some way of checking? And we can do that with a video consultation. So we can check in with you and make sure that we're giving you the best advice, whether it's safe to wait till tomorrow or whether you really need to do something about it now. And the other sorts of cases I think are vital and something I found in lockdown 1.0, as everyone calls it now. Chronic conditions are so well suited to being supported by this. So it might be, for example, that your cat or dog has a skin problem. And we're finding that, you know, you go to the vets and you have your medicine checkups, but in between times, what's going on? You know, so people will often bring their pets when the skin's really bad because the last thing that they want to do is pop their cat in a carrier. It really stresses them. They might even be sick on the journey. And some cats will hide for days post a vet journey. So we want to be there for those people to give them that extra support, not instead of their physical surgery, but that extra support. Arthritis in our senior cases as well, that's a huge area that we believe that this can really support, because the more touch points we have with a patient, the more little changes we can make, and that has massive impact on their welfare.
And certainly one of the aspects about lockdown one, two, or indeed three, who knows how many more will they actually be faced with, is pet ownership has skyrocketed. I mean, looking at the figures from Pets at Home here, nigh on a fifth increase, that's 75%, just under a fifth in terms of people purchasing pets and so on. We've hammered the message through on previous shows, and we continue to do so. A pet is obviously a lifetime commitment. And presumably, Natalie, you'd endorse that it's a case of, look at the example of Rebecca and Alfie. You know, they are a firm contact. You know, they need to be there all the time, really.
Yes, you're absolutely spot on there. I think it's a really, really important message, and actually something that I think people need to take heed of a little bit more. And I think people look at a pet and they think, this is what I would really like. But actually what we need to look at is, what type of pet suits your lifestyle? So everybody's looked at lockdown and gone, oh, I'm home all the time. Isn't this fantastic? But that's not real life, and hopefully won't be long term. So they need to look at, does an animal fit in to that in 6 months' time? If I am back at work 10 hours a day, is that fair to have a dog at home? And I think people often, with the likes of rabbits, they will often take a rabbit on thinking, oh, it's a really low maintenance pet. And therefore our rabbits can often find themselves neglected. So I would definitely advocate that you go and speak to somebody, and a vet is a great place to start, because they will have ideas on what it costs to actually buy the pet, but also the longer term costs. So things like your insurance, your healthcare bills, and they will be able to talk you through what animal's right for you. I think that's a really great time to first touch base with a vet, rather than when you've got a new puppy and you go in and go, what do I do now? If you can get that advice first, you're streets ahead of the game then.
Rebecca, how old is Alfie, and how did he actually enter your life, or how did he choose you to be his companion?
He's about 8 years old. We adopted him from, he was in a foster home. He was a rescue dog. He was 7 months old, and we rescued him from his foster parents, who were looking after him at the time. We just fell in love with him. We saw his picture and we went to meet him, and he was ours from there. And he's a much loved member of the family now. So that's how it happened.
And not a pandemic puppy, because clearly, Natalie, that's another thing that perhaps not surprisingly, that if puppies suddenly start meeting complete strangers post-lockdown, they may get a little bit anxious.
Yeah, and I think this is something that we are talking about, and a lot of the veterinary behaviourists have come up with a theory that if we can use the lockdown to our advantage, because let's face it, there aren't many, perhaps we could actually socialise our pups in a way that might be more beneficial to them than pre-lockdown. And the reason for that is, every time we get a pup, we are obviously so proud of this gorgeous little bundle of fluff. And we go on a walk and we go, here's my puppy, here's my puppy, here's my puppy. And we have to remember that these pups are only little and everything is new to them. So it's a lot like a child, really. And if there's lots of in-your-face experiences and lots of stresses that go along with that, it can actually be quite overwhelming. So if we use lockdown wisely, quite often people will be passing on the opposite side to the street to us. So what we want to do is let our puppies stop and look. Whereas normally we're busy, we want to exercise and we've got places to be, just take everything that little bit slower. And if they are interested in looking at that person across the road, let them. Give them a few seconds, you know, that, yeah, check it out. What's going on over there, Mum? Looks safe. When they look back to us and say, yeah, checked, Mum, I'm really happy. Give them a little treat, whether that's a toy or whether that's a food reward. And then what we're basically saying is, brilliant, you looked, you were happy, you were content. And as soon as you look back at me, that was the right thing to do. Your focus is back on me. Brilliant. Let's move on to the next thing. So actually, that is a really great way to socialise our puppies. And we can use lockdown a little bit to our advantage, because people are less likely to come straight up and put their hands all over the puppy. And that's really nice for the pup, because they can watch from a distance and get used to things.
Rebecca, does this take you back nostalgically to the first days of Alfie's socialisation, or is it a case of, well, he should be grateful he's been rescued in the first place?
Well, he wasn't as young as most puppies are, as you get them from, you know, as puppies. He was a rescue dog, as I said. He was about 7 months old, and he was already a really social dog despite his circumstances that he'd grown up in as a puppy. So we were really lucky with that. He's really good friends with our next door neighbour's dog, so he gets a lot of socialisation when he's able to see other dogs. He's very happy with other dogs, as I said, but yeah, it is lovely to see dogs socialising and being happy. And when they don't particularly like other dogs, as you said, it's important we allow them to have the time to become more comfortable with that, definitely.
Just like I'm a big advocate for Staffies. Staffies are great dogs and they get a bad rep, but I think they can be such wonderful companions.
They do. He's such a lovely dog. He loves children. He loves adults. He loves everyone. And there's actually a lady in my village who was actually wary of Staffies before she met Alfie. And she always says to us when she sees him that Alfie was the dog that changed her mind about them. So
that's really great.
It's like lovely. A heartrending story, I can say. I was going to suggest, Natalie, we need a series of yourself giving advice for puppy rearing, etc. But obviously, put Alfie in as a co-presenter, and I think we got a BAFTA award.
He'd love it.
He's the future. Alfie's the star, definitely.
He would love it.
VetOnTheNet.com, VetOnTheNet.com, presumably the best place to go to find out more information about Vet on the Net. You've even got an incoming call from Natalie, actually, on the front page. It's amazing. It's great there. Which is wondrous. Are there any other websites you'd point people in the direction of, Natalie, in terms of finding out more details about what we've been talking about today, National Dog Walking Month?
We've got a blog on our website that you can go to, which will tell you a little bit more about safe walking, things like keeping high-vis jackets on, collars on our dogs that are light reflective, those kinds of things. And then, you know, if you are ever unsure about any advice you find online, because there can be some interesting concepts out there, I would always say seek a professional's opinion, and they'll be able to support you through your decisions.
Yes, very appropriately phrased there, Natalie. Always seek a professional's opinion. Don't take the lines of what Donald Trump's saying. He never even had a dog in the White House. Sorry, political point there, but there we are. Natalie, it's been great connecting with your good self today. We've got two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
It's been absolutely fantastic. I've really enjoyed it, yeah. I loved hearing about Alfie. He sounds like a great character.
And do you have any pets yourself? I mean, often vets sort of say, no, I work with them. I can't stand living with them. What's the connection?
No, I'm surrounded by pets. So I have a Tibetan Terrier called Groot and a Labrador Cross Collie who I hand-reared from 2 weeks old. Her name's Poppy. And as you can imagine, being a hand-rear, she is the cuddliest, snuggliest dog you will ever meet in your life. And I've also got two cats, Mungo Jerry and Skimble Shanks.
There you are. You could actually go into the summertime for Mungo Jerry, but you're too young to remember the original track, so what the hey, we'll take that away from the whole process. I take it then we can look forward to featuring you again in the not-too-distant future, Natalie.
I'd absolutely love to come and chat to you again, yes.
Natalie Walters, co-founder of Vet on the Net and general all-round wonderful vet expert, and indeed veterinary expert. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.